Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Friday, September the 25th. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Burkina Faso's coup leader, General Gilbert Diendéré, apologises for overthrowing the interim government and hopes he will be forgiven.
Yes, an amnesty would be desirable. The amnesty was proposed to us by ECOWAS. It would be good if it was given.
We hear what the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have to say about the economies of Central Africa.
Performance in 2014 and 15 has deteriorated as a result of stagnating revenues on the one side and increasing expenditure on the other.
And we'll also be looking at human rights in Zimbabwe. Stay tuned.
Top story.
In Burkina Faso, interim president Michel Kafando is back in office and his country hopefully back on the road to democratic governance. But what should become of the coup plotters? Should they be put on trial or granted an amnesty? Coup leader Gilbert Diendéré told DW he's hoping for an amnesty, something which was initially proposed by ECOWAS mediators. And as Fred Mavuni reports, the full content of the deal ECOWAS brokered has yet to be revealed.
Wednesday was a historical day in Burkina Faso as interim president Michel Kafando was reinstated and sworn in for the second time as the president in less than a year. His speech was full of hope and saluted Burkinabes for standing firm during dark days.
The people's reaction, especially that of our militant youth, the international community's disapproval and the unanimous condemnation of the coup reinforces our conviction that we are on the right path and that our cause is a just one.
However, General Diendéré did not attend the ceremony to reinstate interim President Kafando on Wednesday, but later held a closed meeting with the West African heads of state. In an exclusive interview with Deutsche Welle, Diendéré said he and the ECOWAS understood one another. Following an exchange of views, he said he still wished for an amnesty, which ECOWAS had initially proposed, but then later did not endorse.
Yes, an amnesty would be desirable. The amnesty was proposed to us by ECOWAS. It would be good if it was given. There are other provisions that we must consider to restore hope to everyone, assurances to each other, and if that is done, I believe the problem will be fully resolved.
According to Paul Melly, associate fellow in the African program at the Chatham House think tank in the UK, General Diendéré's demands might be given, but seems to be far attainable, considering his political weaknesses.
General Diendéré has admitted that the coup was wrong and that it should not have taken place. And in doing that, he has, as it were, given up his claim to be a legitimate political voice in the questions, the conditions for restoring the civilian government. General Diendéré isn't really in a very strong political position to start setting conditions.
Diendéré has stepped aside, but the question of amnesty remains unsettled, as does the fate of the presidential guard. Prior to the coup, a government commission recommended the presidential guard to be dissolved.
Fred Mavuni, also unresolved, is whether supporters of ousted President Blaise Compaoré should be allowed to stand in the upcoming elections. Could such unresolved issues derail the crisis management carried out by ECOWAS over the past week in Burkina Faso? Let's return now to Paul Melly, from whom we've just been hearing in Fred Mavuni's report.
I don't think they will derail the crisis management, but I think they will mean that further negotiations are needed in order to reach an agreement that everybody is prepared to sign up for setting the conditions for the next election and also setting the outlook for members of the presidential security regiment who were involved in the putsch. ECOWAS leaders backed the transitional government. They've given no comfort to the people who staged the putsch, but they are advising all sides to show a readiness for consensus.
In that case, would it be beneficial for the future health of the country's democracy if the RSP, that is the presidential guard to which the coup plotters belong, were to be disbanded?
The disbandment of the presidential regiment would be a good idea because it's so closely associated with the regime of former President Compaoré, who was an authoritarian ruler. However, it may be more politically expedient, more politically shrewd to leave decisions over the future of the presidential regiment until there is a new elected head of state. We'll be in a much more politically strong position to take such a delicate decision.
What's your opinion to people who are saying that the coup plotters should be called to account for their actions in the court of law before the elections take place? Would that be essential for any process of national reconciliation?
By staging a coup, at one level, they have broken the law, and therefore it's possible for the judicial wheels to start moving. At another level, there's clearly a very political decision as to whether an actual prosecution and indictment would go ahead, surely.
From what you were saying, that in spite of the details of the agreement signed by ECOWAS, that it is somehow not binding.
It's not entirely clear whether the agreement is binding or not, because essentially what happened was that the presidents of Senegal and Benin went to Ouagadougou to negotiate at a stage when the presidential regiment was in control of the city, having staged the coup. They then negotiated proposed terms for a settlement, but this was not advice are binding upon anyone.
As a result of this event of the past week in Burkina Faso, does ECOWAS now carry more weight as a political organization able to step in and restore constitutional order in its member countries?
I think this is an important reinforcement of ECOWAS's standing, because for several years now, ECOWAS has been different from the other regional blocs in Africa in the strength of its very public commitment to the principles of multi-party constitutional democracy. In this crisis, ECOWAS has been the institutional leader. In some previous crises, although ECOWAS has had that position, it hasn't necessarily been the dominant player.
Paul Melle from Chatham House in the UK, talking there to Aboubakar Jallo.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank say that the economies of Central Africa are performing worse than their counterparts in the south and east of the continent, and that terrorism, armed conflict and cross-border crime are to blame for their poor growth rates. The two world bodies say that steps need to be taken to reverse this decline of the Central African economies. From Cameroon, Moki Kinseka reports.
At the courtyard of Marwa Handicraft Market in northern Cameroon, traders discuss the prospects of their business. Yayambuli is one of them. He trades between Cameroon and Nigeria.
Peace has no price. None of our businesses is moving because of galloping insecurity. People are also crying that goods are becoming very expensive without knowing that it is because the goods are not even available.
But not only traders are suffering. Customs posts are equally affected, says Herman Paul, a lawmaker from northern Cameroon.
There is one custom station in the far north that used to collect more than 700 million per month. That custom post has presently been closed down. Can you see the consequences that our economy is running?
Cameroon's Minister of Territorial Administration, René Emmanuel Sadi, says Cameroonians, especially on the northern border with Nigeria, are now poorer than they were before the Boko Haram terrorism.
Le prix du carburant frelaté importé du Nigeria.
Prices of petroleum products imported from Nigeria and widely used by Cameroonians are increasing by the day, with serious consequences for the economy. Public, private and parapublic services and trade has been paralyzed by Boko Haram. Commercial exchanges with Nigeria have drastically reduced.
Mario de Ramarogze, senior economist and head of the Africa Department at the International Monetary Fund, says insecurity in had led to increased expenditure on arms and humanitarian needs, leading to rapidly growing debt and a weak financial performance of the public enterprise sector.
Performance in 2014 and 15 has deteriorated as a result of stagnating revenues on the one side and increasing expenditure on the other. Expenditure has increased in both of its components, both current expenditure and capitalism. And a lot of projects, infrastructure projects, are also financed by borrowing, especially by foreign borrowing. And so when you put the two together, we have noted a rapid increase in the debt level.
He adds that due to increase in capital expenditures, overall fiscal deficit on a cash basis, including grants, has significantly deteriorated.
The second major factor is that terrorist threats, which back then in May 2014 were mostly contained within the territory of Nigeria, at the beginning of this year had unfortunately reached Cameroonian territory. This threat evidently disturbs the economic activity and it has generated additional budgetary outlays.
The delegation, however, said the economy had demonstrated some resiliency, which has enabled growth rate stagnate at 6%, and urged Central African countries to implement reforms that will promote stronger and more inclusive growth and reduce social inequalities.
Marky Kinseka with that report from Cameroon. You're listening to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link, coming to you from Bonn in Germany.
Human rights.
In Human Rights this week, we take you to Zimbabwe, where critics say the rights of opposition politicians, journalists and bloggers are constantly being violated by the government. Just recently, seven opposition members of parliament received death threats for their role in criticising President Robert Mugabe after he read the wrong State of the Nation address to parliament. Mugabe has further tightened media freedom in the country because of what he terms unethical journalism. Such rights abuses by the Zimbabwean leader and his ZANU-PF party are attracting severe international criticism. Columbus Mafunga reports from Harare.
These latest developments are worrying rights groups such as Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. Here is Simeon Mawanza, Amnesty International's researcher for Southern Africa.
Any threats towards lawmakers who are exercising their duty to speak freely about issues in their own country would be an issue of concern to Amnesty International. It's always troubling within Zimbabwe when we get reports of harassment and intimidation of either journalists or members of the opposition parties or human rights activists. One of the cases that we are also concerned about in Zimbabwe is the disappearance of Itai Dzamara. And with these death threats coming in the background of where a human rights political activist has gone missing for over 6 months, we are particularly concerned.
Equally worried is Jesse Fungai Majome, one of the seven opposition MPs who received death threats if they recalled President Robert Mugabe in parliament. No arrests have been made in connection with the matter.
I do not expect that I should get a threat for executing my parliamentary duties, carrying on the work that I was elected to do. I see the hands, the fingerprints of the state in this, because it cannot possibly be an individual, a private, ordinary individual. It is my suspicion that I am being singled out because I dared to ask, to question why the head of state was not complying with the Constitution and issuing an annual State of the Nation address, which is now required by the Constitution to do.
Dewa Mavinga, a senior Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch, says no one has a right to silence MPs.
We also believe as Human Rights Watch that President Mugabe should not be issuing threats to journalists. It is especially worrying when it comes from President Mugabe, who is also the chair of the African Union. It sends a message that there is no seriousness in terms of the protection of the rights of journalists in Africa. We hope that African Union leaders would have concerted efforts to defend media freedoms across Africa.
Zimbabwe is one of the six SADC countries, together with Angola, Lesotho, Swaziland, South Africa, and Zambia, where rights groups say there are serious ongoing cases of human rights abuses that need to be addressed.
Columbus Mavhunga in Harare. In Uganda, the opposition parties have failed to agree on a single candidate who would lead them into next year's elections. The parties that make up the Democratic Alliance opposition coalition have been locked in meetings trying to identify who would have the best chance of unseating President Yoweri Museveni. But rather than opting for one candidate, they have decided to field two. From Kampala, Alex Jitter reports.
After showdown talks on Wednesday night, the members of the Democratic Alliance came to one conclusion. Kizza Besigye and Amama Mbabazi will both run against President Museveni in the next elections. The spokesperson of the Democratic Alliance, TDA Wafula Ogutu, appeared disheartened as he made this announcement.
The membership of the alliance will take different paths in respect to the matter of a presidential candidate. The summit of TDA will convene at an appropriate moment to consider the other aspects of TDA work in respect to continuing to explore unity and cooperation in pursuing the goals and objectives of the alliance.
Ugandans had expected that the alliance would agree on a single candidate, but with the talks dragging on for weeks, it became clear that the parties were finding it hard to agree on one. Kizza Besigye, who has lost to President Museveni three times in presidential elections, was highly expected to be favoured by the opposition. Amama Mbabazi was a former prime minister in the government of President Museveni. When he announced that he would challenge Museveni in the next elections, everything changed. Henry Kasacha is the executive director of the Dialogue and Democracy Training Center in Uganda. He says this process to find a single candidate was bound to be hard, given the approach used.
It was a bit too naive for the TDA to think that they can enter this process on a Wednesday evening and at about 4 or 5 o'clock on Friday, they have a candidate. People are increasingly making statements that are attacking each other's personality, and I think that is not really very healthy for a consensus-building process. And if you have chosen consensus as an approach, you want to ensure there is inclusivity, there is the participation of everybody, and you are doing all this with a political class that has no culture of dialoguing.
Analysts had said that a united opposition was going to mount strong opposition for Museveni to beat. The failure to select a single candidate was therefore good news to the ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM. Richard Todwong is the Deputy Secretary General of the NRM.
We knew they would not work together, and we knew what happened would happen anyway. If four people cannot agree in a room, how do they think they can lead Uganda with the diversity that we have? It's just a sign of weakness in them. So we are not bothered as a party, and we were prepared for any.
Some members of the TDA were, however, happy with the outcome. They preferred Kizza Besigye because, as they claim, he best represents their cause.
Well, we needed someone who's, represented the fundamentals of the opposition, mainly good governance, no corruption, rule of law, and many, many other issues as stated in our protocols.
He has no structures, his group is amorphous, he has no constitution, we don't know who vetted him. to succeed to become a flag bearer of that amorphous group. We therefore own the struggle to reform this society democratically.
Mbaba's supporters refused to directly respond to claims by the Besigye camp that they have no support and structures on the grassroots. The Uganda Electoral Commission will hold nominations in November, and the election is expected to take place in February next year.
Alex Jitter reporting from Kampala.
Your say.
Time now, as always on a Friday, for you, the listener, to tell us what you think of the stories we've been covering over the past week. We now join Abubakar Jallo and Happiness Matanji.
Hi, everyone. This week, we reported a number of issues, but our main focus was on Burkina Faso. As mentioned in the top story, interim President Michel Kafanda has been reinstated and civilian rule restored after the last week's military coup.
We have been reporting that the coup leaders, including their head, General Gilbert Diendere, have agreed to return to barracks, and the army, loyal to the interim government, also has withdrawn its forces from the capital, Ouagadougou. This decision apparently diffused a tense standoff between the two rival forces sparked by the putsch.
Our regular contributors have also been following this topic very keenly. Aliu Muhammad from Nigeria said, Gilbert Diendere has to be praised for returning and handling power to the civilian, though ECOWAS has to be praised more for their wide role they played through the successful handling of the issues. On the other hand, Aliu said he was certain that General Diendere will keep to his word because he had already made public his intentions and willingness to step down and give civilian rule a chance to succeed in Burkina Faso.
If I may step in there for a little bit, why was Aliu certain that General Diendere would hand over power to a civilian government?
He said Diendere showed due respect to ECOWAS representatives and had apparently revealed his readiness to comply with the outcome result of the dialogue in Abuja. But he doesn't support any possible postponement of the forthcoming election in Burkina Faso and hope ECOWAS too will not consider it.
That's an interesting view there. What else have other listeners been saying about Burkina Faso?
Rasmanko from Tanzania said, a military cannot lead a country. Only good governance can. He congratulated the Burkina Faso military anyway for their willingness to give way to democracy. Joel Imopusi from Kenya says, the situation in Burkina Faso should be a lesson to other African countries and other states in the entire world, which are ruled by dictators. Michael Porong said, the army cannot topple the government. They can only change the leader. And finally, Hussein Choal said, problems cannot be solved through the use of weapons. Any dispute can be solved by discussion and negotiation.
Happiness Matanji and Abubakar Jallo. And remember, you too can contribute to Your Say. Just put your thoughts in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110. Bonn, Germany, or in an SMS to country code 49 160 957 59510. That's country code 49 160 957 59510. A reminder of our main stories before we leave you. Burkina Faso's coup leader, General Gilbert Diendere, has apologised for overthrowing the interim government and asked for an amnesty. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have reported that armed conflict and cross-border crime are stunting economic growth in Central Africa. And we've also been hearing about the human rights abuses inflicted on journalists, bloggers and opposition politicians in Zimbabwe, according to rights groups. And there we come to the end of another week here on Africa Link. Abubakar Jallo, from whom we've just been hearing, will be here at this time on Monday. Do join him if you can. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.